NDR Info. Nachtclub.
So, bei mir im Studio in der zweiten Stunde ist, wie gesagt, Tess Parks. Und sie kommt gleich zu Wort. Erstmal Musik von ihrem aktuellen Album, das in Zusammenarbeit mit Anton Newcomb entstanden ist. Und wir hören jetzt das Stück Right On. Das war so Right On von dem Album Tess Parks und Anton Newcomb. So heißt das Album auch. Und es ist eine Zusammenarbeit zwischen Tess Parks und Anton Newcomb. Und Tess ist jetzt bei mir im Studio. Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, Paul.
I'm glad you could make it.
Me too. Are we going to talk about that?
Well, it took you a bit of time to get here, but
yes.
I mean, it's better late than never.
I'm so glad.
And I'm just
to
glad
be
it
here.
Worked out, yeah. I was getting slightly apprehensive that it wouldn't work out at all, but yeah.
Everything always works out.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
We stay positive, yeah. And we're all nice and relaxed now, aren't we? It's very good. And we just heard Right On from the album Tess Parks and Anton Newcomb. I mean, was there a reason for that actually not to be given a proper name? Because the album prior to that did actually have a proper name, didn't it?
Yes.
Was it just meant to confuse us that we would think it was the debut album of the two of you together? Or
I think, I was joking around saying we should call the album What's the Story, Afternoon Glory or something. You know, just like messing about. And he's like, no, like that's a silly idea. And, you know, he said, we already called the first record I Declare Nothing. So, like, we have nothing else to say.
Okay.
Which I totally stand by.
Right, so it's an honest statement just to leave the album title away. Okay. Ja, also Sie haben das einfach nur so genannt, Tess Parks und Anton Newcomb, weil Sie wirklich keine Idee hatten für einen Albumtitel. Tess kam auf die Idee, das Album What the Story Afternoon Glory zu nennen. So eine Anspielung natürlich auf Oasis, aber er war dagegen. Und das Album davor hieß I Declare Nothing. Und das war eigentlich auch eine Aussage, dass Sie eigentlich nichts zu sagen haben in dem Sinne. Und dann haben Sie gesagt, okay, das wäre vielleicht ehrlicher, wenn wir einfach auf so einen Albumtitel verzichten. Of course, the first record, Blood Hot, which came out in 2013, and that gave us the idea that you were going to be a solo artist, that we would expect you to make 20 albums over the next 20 years or whatever as a solo artist. And then you came across Anton Newcomb. And do you actually know where you stand in that respect yourself now? I mean, is there likely to be more work on your own? I mean, you're on tour now without him. So is that a message that you're sending us?
I think, you know, it's always been something I wanted to do on my own and with friends and, you know, and I'm open to all the collaborations in the world with everyone. But, you know, Anton's in a very successful, popular rock band. And, you know, that's his, you know, first project. And, you know, I'd like to work with other people and maybe, like, you know, produce my own records. And, yeah, so 20 records of my own will be coming shortly.
That's coming also. That's on the cards now. Okay, right. did you actually, because he's so much older than you as well, did it get work two ways? On the one hand, you were learning from him, but did it also make you feel maybe not as independent as you might have done because you're so much younger than he is? He's just got so much more experience.
For me, it was like Bob Dylan going to meet Woody Guthrie or something, you know? It's like I was working with a hero. You know, I was very in awe of watching him work, and it taught me a lot. It had nothing to do with, like, age gap or, you know, I just felt like a student, you know, wanting to learn from someone who's great.
So it's been very beneficial for you, think?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
And do you think that now, like, three albums in and two with him, that the next album that you're going to make is going to be very much different to your first album, do you think?
Yeah, well, I've learned a lot since then, but I'm ready to do some crazy things, crazy different sounds, and I'm excited. Yeah, I've been working on some stuff, so.
Okay. And no writer's block yet?
No, never, no.
Cool.
No.
Ja, ich fragte Sie, ob es ein grundsätzlich ein positiver Einfluss gewesen ist, dass Sie so viel mit Anton Newcomb zusammengearbeitet hat. Und sie meinte, ja, sie hat wirklich sehr viel von ihm gelernt. Und dass er so viel älter war, hat keine Rolle gespielt. Also diese Kluft im Alter, das war für sie nicht von Bedeutung. Er ist einfach ein Held von ihr immer gewesen. Und sie hat es verglichen, als ob Bob Dylan Woody Guthrie treffen würde. Und sie meinte, sie konnte wirklich nur davon profitieren, dann mit ihm zusammenzuarbeiten. Aber er hat natürlich seine eigene Band, Brian Johnston Massacre, hat sehr viele andere Projekte. Und sie kann nicht erwarten, dass er immer Zeit hat, um mit ihr zusammenzuarbeiten. Und deshalb hat sie schon vor der Zukunft dann wieder eigenständig zu sein. Und sie glaubt, dass sie jetzt so viel gelernt hat, dass sie sehr zuversichtlich ist, was die Zukunft betrifft. Und sie meinte, dass sie wirklich verrückte, tolle neue Ideen hat, die sie unbedingt auch bald umsetzen will. When you say crazy ideas, which you want to bring to fruition, I mean, is there a time when you actually feel you have to write down those crazy ideas? Can you carry them around with you for any length of time and they're always going to stay in your head, or do you have to write them down? Do you have to say, well, almost, I have to call off the show tonight because I've got to write a few songs instead, you know, or can you put it off for another day or another month? Or
yeah, I mean, I haven't really, we toured last November and December, and then it was Christmas time, and then I moved to LA where I've been demoing songs and writing, you know, a prolific amount, I suppose. And I mean, I generally write things down anyway, just, you know, in case I get amnesia randomly or, you know. Just,
okay.
But no, generally, like, the ideas that I stand by are always just in my head, and I, you know.
Ja, sie sagt, dass sie tatsächlich also viele Demos in L.A. vor kurzem gemacht hat, und sie ist schon dafür, dass sie dann ihre Ideen dann niederschreibt und dass sie die dokumentiert, sobald sie dann irgendwelche Inspirationen auch hat, weil sie Angst hat, dass sie vielleicht irgendwie alles vergessen könnte, dass sie vielleicht unter Gedächtnisverlust leiden könnte. Aber letztendlich ist sie schon eigentlich gewissenhaft dabei, neue Ideen dann immer umzusetzen, und sie ist schon sehr zuversichtlich jetzt, was ihre kreative Zukunft betrifft. Right, so you're going to play a song for us live now, Some Days, which is one of your first songs ever, isn't it?
Yeah.
From the album Blood Hot from 2013.
And yeah.
How old were you when you wrote this? Can you remember?
I wrote Some Days shortly after my 20th birthday.
Okay.
And I was living in London in Shoreditch, and it was after a massive falling out with one of my best friends, temporarily, because she's still one of my best friend's sisters, whatever.
Has he managed to patch it up?
Yeah.
Because you wrote the song, or?
No, but...
Or in spite of the song, or?
Yeah, you know. Yeah, it was an inspiring time period.
Okay.
Some Days.
Also dieses Lied, das sie für uns gleich spielen wird, live bei uns, ist von ihrem ersten Album, Blood Hot, von 2013. Sie war 20 Jahre alt, als sie das Lied komponiert hat. Und sie hat es dann geschrieben, unmittelbar nach einem heftigen Streit mit einer Freundin, mit der sie zusammengelebt hatte in London zu dem Zeitpunkt. Und die sind immer noch ganz eng befreundet, aber das war so eine schwierige Zeit, die sie gerade hatten. Und deshalb war es wichtig für sie, dieses Lied zu schreiben, um quasi ihren Dampf abzulassen. So, das ist die Geschichte von dem Song, das sie live für uns jetzt spielt. Hier ist jetzt Some Days von dem Album Blood Hot. Hier ist Tess Parks live bei uns beim NDR.
Some days and feel grateful for this day.
So das war die Live-Version von Some Days von dem Bloodhot-Album von Tess Parks. And Tess is jetzt bei mir im Studio. It's an obvious thing to say, and you probably get sick of being asked about your voice, because the voice is something a bit special. It's not run-of-the-mill. It's not just normal indie fodder, you know. And it's your trademark, something to be proud of, no doubt. I mean, is it something which... I mean, you can't have sung like that when you were six, which is, I think, when you got into Oasis. If I've done my homework right, you got into Oasis when you were six, but you weren't singing like you are now.
No.
At the age of six, were you singing like Liam Gallagher at the age of six? Or
I was always trying to emulate, you know, the voices that I loved. I was, you know, singing along to Oasis songs from, you know, that age. And
so you were actually trying to sound like Liam Gallagher.
I mean, not intentionally.
But ended up sounding like you do now instead.
Yeah, and I loved Cat Power. She was like one of the most formative female, well, the first formative female voice that I was like, you know, I want to sound like that, you know. I don't know where it comes from.
Okay.
It's like a, you know, I feel like it's coming out of my heart or something. It's not like a throat, like a, I don't know, it's not. Like a choir diaphragm, you know, exercise singing voice.
It's just spiritual.
Yeah, I've been sad a lot in my life and also really happy, so.
Okay.
I don't know. It's just the voice of an often sad person, maybe.
And I think also the fact it also sounds slightly rough as well. I mean, I could imagine it could be kind of tailor-made to sound more mainstream, but there's something really obviously authentic about it, which appeals to me, and it doesn't sound like it's been too polished. You know, that's the impression I get, but I mean, I don't know. As a listener, that's the impression I get.
Thank you. My mom reminded me recently that I used to scream at the top of my lungs before shows to kind of get it, like a really raspy, kind of broken quality, and I don't really do that anymore, but I also have some other like recordings on albums where I'm like, oh, like that doesn't sound good, like I was really pushing it too hard. And you know, there's a, I think I found like a nice sweet in between voice that I think I've found the voice that I like singing in the best now.
So if you've improved.
Yeah
Okay. Ja, ihre Stimme ist natürlich sehr markant, eine schon eine besondere Stimme und nicht gerade 0815. Und das weiß sie natürlich auch selbst. Und sie sagt, dass sie einfach immer instinktiv gesungen hat, aus der tiefsten Seele hinaus. Also weil sie immer so ihr Innerstes nach außen kehrt, wenn sie dann Musik macht. Und sie meinte, das kommt wahrscheinlich daher, dass sie eine Mensch ist, die starke Emotionen empfunden hat. Sie ist auch oft glücklich gewesen, aber hat ziemlich viele traurige Phasen auch gehabt. Und sie denkt, dass das natürlich auch Einfluss auf ihre Stimme hat, dass die Stimme gewissermaßen melancholisch ist. Aber hat auch eine gewisse Rauheit, finde ich, die dann besonders authentisch rüberkommt. Und ihre Mutter hat sie vor kurzem daran erinnert, dass sie früher, bevor sie eine Show gemacht hat, bevor sie ein Konzert gespielt hat, hat sie ganz laut geschrien vorher. backstage quasi, um zu üben, damit die Stimme schön rau klingen würde, damit sie nicht zu glatt klingen würde. Und das macht sie nicht mehr. Und sie denkt, dass sie schon jetzt so eine gute Kompromisslösung gefunden hat, ein gewisses Mittelfeld gefunden hat jetzt, wo sie nicht zu rau klingt, aber auch nicht zu lieblich. Also sie denkt schon, dass sie als Sängerin deutlich besser geworden ist. Und sie hat in der Vergangenheit, also sie war große Fan von Oasis, als sie ein Kind war, hat aber auch Frauenstimmen wie, also Frauensängerinnen wie Cat Power zum Beispiel auch sehr geliebt und sehr angehimmelt. Und I've actually got a Cat Power album because I knew about that. I've got this album, You Are Free. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, it's one of my favourites of hers, actually, I think, before it got too mainstream. And it was still very kind of stripped down, wasn't it, to,
it's my favorite.
To the basics.
Yeah.
It's your favourite as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you got a favourite song in that? Can you remember one?
I Don't Blame You is great. I love He Wore. I love Baby Doll.
Okay. Baby Doll's one, which I haven't actually played all that often, so maybe we could play that.
Cool.
What did you say, I Don't Blame You or Baby Doll? What was the other one you said?
He Wore.
He Wore.
Or Speak For Me, that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, let's go for Baby Doll, shall we?
Sure.
Okay. Wir hören jetzt ein Stück von Cat Power. Eine Heldin von ihr von früher, von dem Album You Are Free 2003. Here's Baby Doll. So das war Baby Doll von Cat Power. Bei mir im Studio ist Tess Parks, die Cat Power zumindest früher auch sehr bewundert hat, bewundert sie eigentlich immer noch. Do you actually feel relaxed in the position you are in the music business in a sense? I mean, you've got something of a cult reputation without being sort of really huge, but do you actually feel that you just live in your own little world? Can you just exist in your own kind of bubble without having to worry about being pressured into being something maybe you don't feel you want to be?
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that, you know, when I first got my, I got my first record deal, and everyone I've worked with since, I've never, you know, had anyone say, like, you need to do this or, like, you need to, you know, be anything other than who you are. And that's not common. And also, you know, it's a weird time to be, you know, actively saying, okay, I want this to be my career and I'm going to keep it that way.
Because you didn't always have the intention to be a musician, did you? Because I read that you came over from Canada when you were very young to London, when you were 17.
Mm-hmm.
Did you more or less run away from home then at the age of 17? Or?
I just wanted to move to London. I wanted to be in the UK. Okay. Being a huge Oasis fan and, you know, most of my favourite music is from... That's not true. I love UK music. I love Britpop.
Okay.
I love
right.
England. And I went to school for photography. At Lennon College of Communication. But I was still writing songs and recording them, but I just hadn't performed them yet. So I realized shortly after I moved there, after I played my first show, I was like, I still do both. I take a lot of photos still, but it just happened that music took a bigger role in my life.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And did it seem strange to meet someone like Alan McGee? Because, I mean, in the timing was strange in a way, because, I mean, he's not obviously, unfortunately, not as influential as he used to be. So in that sense, it would have been better if you'd been born 20 years earlier.
Yeah,
and then
definitely.
You would probably could have been as big as Oasis then.
I would have probably toured with Oasis, which
exactly,
there's still time. It's probably going to happen. But, no, meeting Alan McGee and then him signing me to his label after not being in the music business for... you know, a considerable amount of time. You know, I could have died happy. It's like the man who signed Oasis. Like, how can this magic exist? It's amazing.
And do you actually still feel in awe of other music? Do you still have like a fan relationship to other artists? Or has that become less now that you got older?
It's become less as, like, you know, I've ended up working with or opening for, you know, having mutual friends or whatever, coming into contact with people that I, when I was younger, you know, had posters on my wall or, you know.
Then you actually meet them in real life then.
Yeah, and it's, I'll never not be an Oasis fanatic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ja, sie kam mit 17 schon rüber von Toronto nach London. Sie wollte unbedingt in London leben, in England leben, weil sie immer ein Riesenfan war von britischer Musik. Und sie war immer ein Riesen-Oasis-Fan. Und sie hat eigentlich ein Studium gemacht in Fotografie. Sie macht immer noch viele Fotos. Aber sie hat sich dann letztendlich doch für Musik entschieden, für eine Karriere in Musik. Und sie hat das Glück gehabt, Alan McGee kennenzulernen, der natürlich Oasis damals entdeckt hat. Und hat damals gerade ein neues Label gegründet, 359 Records. Das war nicht so prominent war wie Creation damals, aber immerhin, für sie war es ein Durchbruch. Es war für sie die Chance, ein Album zu machen. Und sie konnte das gar nicht glauben, diesen Typen kennenzulernen, der wirklich Oasis entdeckt hat. Und sie ist immer noch ein großer Fan von Musik. Sie hat immer noch so ein Fanverhältnis zur Band. Sie wird immer ein riesen Oasis-Fan sein, zum Beispiel. Aber es ist natürlich ein bisschen weniger geworden, weil sie inzwischen so viele Musiker persönlich kennengelernt hat und dadurch natürlich, sie verehrt sie vielleicht nicht so sehr wie früher. Also dadurch wird das Ganze ein bisschen entmystifiziert eigentlich. Okay, so we're going to hear another track you're going to play for us live, Life After Youth, from the latest album with Anton Newcombe.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you say you're going to carry on working without him probably in the near future. Do you have any feeling of regret, maybe, that that might could even be the last time you've done an album with him? Or are you confident there will be another time you could work with him? Or don't you really mind?
I think there's always the possibility. I mean, I co-wrote a lot of songs for Brian Jonestown Massacre as well over, you know, the course of the past 5 years, 4 years. I think, you know, we'll always be friends, and you know, if the time is right or we have, you know, ideas that suit each other, of course it would make sense, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sie sagt, dass sie nicht hundertprozentig sicher sein kann, dass sie weiterhin mit Anton Newcombe arbeiten wird. Vielleicht war es das letzte Album, das sie zusammen machen, aber die sind befreundet, sie werden auch befreundet bleiben. Sie hat auch in den letzten 4-5 Jahren einige Songs mitkomponiert, auch für Brian Johnson Massacre. Insofern ist es nicht nur so kurz und vorübergehend gewesen. Es war ein bisschen dauerhaft eigentlich, diese Zusammenarbeit. Und sie kann sich schon vorstellen, dass sie irgendwann fortgesetzt wird. Aber dieses Album erschien Ende letzten Jahres, hieß einfach Tess Parks and Anton Newcombe. Und wir hören jetzt die Live-Version von uns jetzt gespielt von ihr von Life After Youth.
See?
Das war also Life After Youth. Live gespielt für uns hier beim NDR von Tess Parks. Das ist ein Stück von ihrem Album Tess Parks and Anton Newcomb. Do you think that because you had this kind of fan relationship to music all the way along, that there is something nostalgic about the music you do? Or do you think in terms of trying to be as innovative as you possibly can, because you were talking about having crazy sounds in your head which you want to kind of realize? Mm. Are you looking for something in between?
It's funny because I never wrote with that intention, and I don't. But, I mean, for instance, last night we played in Cologne, and I normally feel really uncomfortable doing an encore or, you know, it's just, it's like, no, but it's me. Like, you don't want this, like, that's weird because I'm whatever. I'm not a big band or whatever.
So you don't think you deserve to do an encore?
No, we definitely deserve to do it. And I had that epiphany last night. But
you're just self-deprecating, you think?
No, I'm just, I guess, not. I don't know. I'm just humble, I suppose. I don't know. But it's really nice. And obviously, if people are asking for an encore, it's a beautiful thing. But, you know, the band reminded me that, you know, when we go to see gigs and a band goes off stage and it builds up this momentum and, you know, it gets the crowd excited, and then you come back on stage and it's like, you know, there's the possibility of making the crowd feel really happy. And yeah, so I think it's good to keep in mind that people do, you know, really care, and they might, you know, potentially, you know, want what I would want out of seeing music, which makes total sense. I just never had thought about it like that before.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but I mean, my initial question was, are you kind of, is it important to try to push the music forward in that sense? Or are you just thinking in, just in terms of what, maybe communicating with the audience and just seeing if you can get the same wavelength as the audience? And whether that's music that's looking forward or looking backwards in history doesn't really matter, because it's all a question of just communicating in a kind of spiritual way with the audience.
Yeah.
That's what the most important thing is for you.
Yeah. No, sorry, I totally, yeah, did just segue that question. But
it's okay.
No, I feel like the people that get it really do get it. And like my general kind of, the reception we get is like, you know, really a very respectful crowd, like not many cell phones, like no one's talking in between songs. It's the people who get it really understand, and it's just understood somehow in between all of us in that room together all at once.
I do think your music, your songs do have some kind of like, almost like a meditation quality in a way.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. So it makes sense that the crowd reacts in that way, in that respectful way, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's, you know, there are mantras or, you know, the repetition. And I think that's another thing that I definitely picked up from Oasis and, you know, like, hey now, a million times, I think.
You didn't pick up the humility from Oasis, though.
No, but I really should. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that you were so fascinated with Oasis. We're just the opposite, of course, to humble.
Oh, no, of course. But I really should kind of, you know.
I met him, actually. I met Noel Gallagher for the first time when, even before Supersonic was released. And I was just played on a cassette in a hotel room on a ghetto blaster. And then he came into the room and he told me that he was going to be a millionaire within about 12 months. And I thought, this guy, he hasn't even released his debut single yet. But he proved to be right. I was amazed.
It's amazing. I think, you know, it's amazing what you say out loud. And if you repeat it enough to many people and say, I'm going to, like, be amazing, and you'll see.
Yeah, and you also told me that Alan McGee agreed with him. He was definitely going to be a millionaire in a year's time. And I just thought, they're both completely mad. You know, get your first single out first before you make comments like that.
Well, Alan McGee said the same thing to me, and I own, like, you know, so much property now, and joking. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Can't even rent a house.
Yeah, but, I mean, do you think that those days are over of like, massive bands that were going to kind of rule the world, like people saying we're the biggest band in the world and also the best band in the world, and these kind of comments doesn't seem to be the case anymore, does it?
No, but I think that there'll be a shift. There has to be a shift at some point, because it's a bit silly now, you know?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Ja, sie sagte, dass sie immer sehr demütig gewesen ist. Also wenn ein Publikum zum Beispiel um Zugabe bittet, dann will sie das eigentlich gar nicht. Sie wehrt sich fast dagegen, weil sie denkt, das traut sie sich fast gar nicht. Weil, also so gut kann sie nicht sein, dass man wirklich verlangt, dass sie noch einen Song spielt. Aber letztendlich sieht sie es ein. Das ist eigentlich, das Publikum hat es verdient. Und sie freut sich sehr darüber, dass das Publikum so respektvoll ist ihr gegenüber. Also wenn sie dann bei Konzerten sind. Und sie denkt, dass es schon so eine echte, eine Art, so spirituelle Art gibt, so eine Kommunikation zwischen Band und Publikum, zwischen Künstler und Publikum. Und das ist sehr, sehr wichtig. Es hat schon fast eine Art Religiosität, so eine meditative Qualität. Sie hat von Mantras geredet. Und sie meinte, das hat sie wiederum an Oasis erinnert. About, what was the Oasis mantra? Hey, hey.
Hey now.
Exactly, yeah. I'm forgetting my Oasis so long ago.
Hey, it's okay. Go back to your roots. It's good.
Jedenfalls hat sie natürlich diese demütige Art nicht von den Gallagher-Brüdern geerbt. Das hat sie natürlich nicht mit denen gemeinsam, das definitiv nicht. Right, so, what do you want to hear from this album again? Do you want to, you can hear anything if you want, anything you've done really, but I'm thinking the album, the most recent album, it would make sense to play something else. Please Never Die or something, or...
Please Never Die is a tune.
It's up to you. You can
Mount Pleasant. Let's
Mount Pleasant.
Mount Pleasant.
Oh, that was the first track I played on the radio from this album.
Oh,
actually,
nice.
Mount Pleasant, yeah.
Thank you.
That was my first choice.
Okay.
When it came out, it was in autumn, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
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 So, wir hören das Stück Mount Pleasant jetzt. Das hat sie sich gerade ausgesucht. Das ist auch das erste Stück, das ich von dem Album gespielt habe in meiner Sendung letztes Jahr. Also Mount Pleasant von Tess Parks und Anthony Newcomb. So, das von Mount Pleasant von Tess Parks und Anthony Newcomb bei mir im Studio ist immer noch Tess Parks. Do you worry about being categorized in any way? Do you actually feel above that, of being categorized? And people are going to maybe talk to you in terms of being psych rock, like Brian Johnston Massacre. I mean, does that bother you? Do you find it even maybe flattering? Or does it irritate you because you think you're actually doing your own thing?
I don't think I'm reinventing the wheel by any means at all, you know. But I think it's only natural for people to make comparisons when they hear music and to say, oh, it sounds like this, or, you know, to generalize it so that it can be categorized and fit into a genre so that, you know, it just narrows it down for people, I suppose. And it doesn't necessarily bother me. I just think all music is psychedelic. So it's, you know, it's, I think, you know, if anything, it's just rock and roll.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just rock and roll.
That's not like a Rolling Stones quote, that does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ja, sie sagt, dass sie ist zwar öfter als so Psych-Rock eingestuft worden, vielleicht auch wegen der Gedankenassoziation mit Anthony Newcomb, mit Brian Johnston Massacre. Aber das stört sie gar nicht. Aber sie meint, dass sie sich auch nichts vormacht, dass sie selbst irgendwie besonders originell sei. Sie meinte, sie kann nicht behaupten, dass sie das Rad neu erfunden hat. Und das kann sie gar nicht, meint sie. Und deshalb, sie ist ganz entspannt, was das betrifft. Sie sagt, dass für sie ist Musik grundsätzlich psychedelisch. Und insofern, wie man es dann nennt, Rock'n'Roll, Psychedelia, keine Ahnung, das ist ihr eigentlich dann relativ egal. And do you think that you have got to the stage now where you can really say you've found your feet? I mean, or could you go back to a point in time where you say, well, now, you know, this is, you're in this for good. I mean, you're not going to switch back to making photos, or it's going to start another degree. And was there a point in time where you thought, well, now I feel self-assured enough to know I'm capable of going through with this?
As soon as Alan McGee offered me a record deal, that's it for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Because that just gave you such a boost of confidence then.
Well, yeah, it's like, you know, if I was going to ever get a record deal, that's the ultimate person that I would have ever wanted one from. So, yeah, amazing, really. Yeah.
And it's interesting because obviously as a young person, you've spent quite a bit of your time in your youth admiring other people.
Mm.
And is it easy for you to accept you being admired by other people yourself?
No, it's weird.
It goes back to this humility thing a bit. You still think it's weird? Are you getting used to it gradually now?
I just don't know how to handle it. Like, people are just, I mean, I can really absorb it. I just need some, like, time to, like, let it sink in sometimes, you know, because people are so effusively kind and, you know, it means so much to me. I just need to, like, you know, I need time to really think about how much that means to me in and how much it means to them. And then it means a lot to, like, everyone. And it's a beautiful thing.
I mean, is it possible to maintain, like, a genuine relationship with fans of yours in that sense? Or does there automatically, like, a kind of hierarchy kick in where in some way they are below you, even though you don't want it to be like that?
No, not at all. And if anything, maybe I'm too nice to some people that are maybe a bit weird.
Okay. Because the way that certain percentage of those are always a bit weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But you can handle that.
Yeah. I got my band of my best guy friends behind me, so they can...
And also the fact that you're an artist, so you understand people being a bit weird anyway, don't you, I suppose?
Yeah,
to
exactly.
a certain extent, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, okay. Ja, sie hat natürlich viel Zeit damit verbracht, als Jugendliche andere Künstler zu bewundern. Und jetzt wird sie auch teilweise bewundert, hat auch ihre Fanbasis. Und das ist ihr immer noch etwas unheimlich. Und sie meinte, sie braucht wirklich Zeit. Und manchmal, das zu verdauen, ist es ihr zwar wichtig, und sie findet es auch ganz toll, aber manchmal ist es ihr ein bisschen unheimlich. Und sie sagt, dass sie es immer noch geschafft hat, eigentlich schon so eine ehrliche Beziehung zu ihren Fans aufrechtzuerhalten. Auch wenn einige manchmal ein bisschen merkwürdig sind und ein bisschen gewöhnungsbedürftig sind. Aber letztendlich, sie ist einfach froh, dass sie diese echte Kommunikation dann auch hat. So, you obviously feel quite optimistic about the future. Is that always the case? Do you ever have a moment during the week or during the month or whatever you think, well, is this going to work out fine? Is everything going to work out fine?
I used to be a lot more doubtful and, again, very sad and easily led by my negative thoughts to, you know, and that prolonged the ultimate goal, which is to just be positive and be hopeful and know that no matter what, like, your whole life, you're going to be okay. And I've kind of very recently in the past, like, 6 months, just chosen, like, happiness always, and it's working really.
Almost like an active choice, in a sense.
Yeah, because, well, it's simple. It's like, if you are good in the world, then the world is really good to you. And, yeah, just positive always.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good.
Ja, ich fragte sie, ob sie grundsätzlich so eine zuversichtliche Einstellung hat dem Leben gegenüber und ihrer Karriere gegenüber, ob sie manchmal ein bisschen schlapp macht und ob sie schlechte Phasen hat, wo sie sich etwas verunsichert fühlt. Und sie meinte, das hat sie in der Vergangenheit häufiger gehabt, dass sie viel mehr Selbstzweifel gehabt hat. Aber das sei nicht mehr der Fall. Seit ungefähr einem halben Jahr ist es ihr gelungen, tatsächlich immer positiv zu denken und wirklich dann irgendwie auf so der Schwerpunkt auf so glücklich sein zu legen. Und das ist ihr tatsächlich gelungen. Wenn man die richtige Attitüde hat, dann kann man das so forcieren, meint sie. Und wenn man sich auch sehr positiv verhält und eine positive Ausstrahlung hat, dann geht das Leben auch mit dir gut um. Und das ist wirklich die beste Methode, die sie hat, um ihr Leben dann zu führen. Raoul, thanks very much for coming out to talk to me.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And for playing live as well. That was really cool.
Thanks.
Appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you.
And what would you like to hear to finish off then?
Of anything?
Anything. Anything you
any
want.
Any music in
everything
the world?
Here. Well, no, I'm not sure about that, but... Anything of yours?
Oh,
And we could hear something from I Declare Nothing, for example, if you wanted.
Sure. Maybe Wehmut? I'm pronouncing it wrong.
Wehmut.
Wehmut.
The first track on the album, Wehmut. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, which proves that you spent a bit of time in Berlin.
Yes.
Okay.
And I have lots of feelings.
Okay. Very good. So zum Schluss hören wir jetzt das Stück Wehmut von dem Album I Declare Nothing. Das war das letzte Album. Das heißt, das vorletzte Album von Tess Park und Anton Newcomb. Und das beweist eben, dass sie ein bisschen Zeit in Berlin verbracht hat mit Anton zusammen. Deshalb heißt das Stück Wehmut. Und sie meinte, sie hat auch viele Gefühle. Insofern passt das. Okay, thanks very much.
Dankeschön.
Und ja, das hören wir jetzt zum Schluss. Das war der Nachtclub mit Paul Baskerville. Ich wünsche euch eine gute Nacht.
NDR Info. Nachrichten.